Welcome back to the third hour of the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that Odyssey app. It's just about 510, 65 degrees on this Monday, April 14th, 2025. I know. It's Monday, I get it, but it's almost done, and hopefully you are done. Almost done for Jake and I. We get to go home and relax a little bit and then do it all again tomorrow. So, the U.S. has had talks, both indirect and direct, with Iran. First time in a long time that that's happened, and they're already a second round. Now, Iran wanted to put it off for a week, I believe, and Donald Trump said, no, we need to get this done. And there is a sense of urgency here, and basically everyone has agreed that Iran can in no way possess or have the potential for a nuclear weapon. That's understood. How we do that, and the Secretary of Defense has said that quite clear. Either Iran does that through negotiations, or the Commander-in-Chief hands that over to me to handle. And that's coming from the Secretary of Defense. That is a direct warning. And believe me, there are assets in place ready for this. Ready and able. So here's the picture that's going on there. We have two battle groups now. You have the USS Truman in the Red Sea, and you have the Carl Vinson, which is just south of the Red Sea in that theater, both within striking distance of Iran. You have already had the Israelis a few months ago enter Iran and basically take out a big portion of their air defense system. Now, Iran does have other systems. They do have air capabilities, unlike the Houthis and such like that that's going on now. But make no mistake, I had this conversation. I had the honor to be down in Annapolis this past weekend. It was my daughter's senior banquet. She was a trainer for the Navy Sprint football team. You know, she wrapped their ankles, bandaged them up, was on the field if there were any injuries. She's done that for the past 4 years. She also does rugby, which is something else. If you ever watched a varsity rugby game, you know, she's picked everything up from teeth to pieces of flesh off the field to get them back patched up. And the interesting thing is you have a certain amount of minutes in rugby, and I didn't know this, to where they can stitch someone up and get them back on the field. So her and the team doctor were stitching one of the rugby players up the other day, 13 stitches above the eye. Completed all 13 stitches, covered it, and got them back out on the field. I think you have 10 minutes to do that. There's a time limit. I think it's 10 minutes. But the mere fact that you just got 13 stitches above your eye because you butted heads with someone or took an elbow or needed a head, and you're going to go back out there to finish, you know, another hour and a half of rugby is just incomprehensible to someone like me. But God bless them. But we had the team banquet Friday night at the Navy Marine Corps Stadium, where Navy football plays. And then we had the senior luncheon the day before. And the senior luncheon is more of a, listen, these are our next generation of Marine and Navy officers that are going out there within just 2 months. They'll be out in the fleet doing whatever specialized training they need to do. I was sitting at a table, and I'm not going to say any names, but I was sitting at a table next to a gentleman who's going Navy Special Warfare. He's going to be a Navy SEAL. So he's off to Buds, and across from me, and he was with his family, and across from me there was another individual who was going EOD, Explosive and Ordnance. So he was going to be a Navy diver who learns to play with bombs. And then my daughter, who's going to be a Marine pilot. She's going to go to the basic school in Quantico, Virginia for 6 months, earn her Eagle Globe and Anchor, and then head to Pensacola for flight school. That was just at our table. There were a dozen other tables with two to three family groups at each table, all very similar. Oh, and you had the other trainer, Michaela, who was going to, she was going to be a Navy WIZO, backseat goose, as you would know it. So she was also at our table. All of them motivated and ready to lead. All of them motivated and ready to go. And from people I've talked to this weekend and just that I talked to in general, our military, our Navy ships, especially in the Red Sea, in the Mediterranean, out in the Middle East, they're being shot at on a daily basis. Ballistic missiles, anti-ship missiles, drones. They're attempting to sink our aircraft carriers, our Arleigh Burke-class destroyers, our cruisers. They're trying to sink them on a daily basis. And we're hitting them back now on a daily basis, which is a good thing because we weren't doing that under the last administration. They would wait a couple of weeks and then blow up some tent somewhere. We are truly taking it back to them, defending our ships as we should. But you really don't get a lot of sense of, you know, there are thousands. In a battle group, there's about 7,000 Marines, sailors on the group of ships that are there. They are trying to kill them on a daily basis, our enemies. They are backed by Iran. They are funded by Iran. They are trained by Iran. Iran is the nucleus that is behind what's going on of these entities like the Houthis trying to kill our sons and daughters on a daily basis, our husbands and wives. You also have Hamas and Hezbollah, who are also backed by Iran. So you have these talks going on. And while we have now two battle groups, the Truman battle group and the Carl Vinson battle group in that area, the Carl Vinson just got there this week. So now we have two aircraft strike groups there. We have sent, and this is all public information that you can find online, so I'm not giving you any secrets or anything like that. We have built up our bombers, B-2 bombers, stealth bombers, at Diego Garcia, which, again, is within striking distance. Now, we're also building up in the Pacific because we're about to do RIMPAC, which is, the Pacific war games, naval war games with a dozen or so nations, Japan, Taiwan, us. There'll be Australia. There'll be a bunch there. So as we're doing that and watching the Chinese, there's this readiness that's going on in the Middle East. And these talks are going on with Iran. And how these talks and where this goes from here is really up to Iran. But if something does not come to fruition with these talks, I would not be surprised, and they've said this outright. The Secretary of Defense literally said this morning, that if these talks do not work out and they do not negotiate a deal, the Commander-in-Chief will give this to me to solve. The Defense Department, meaning something's going to happen. And you have to take into effect, oh, we can't get into a war with Iran. What is this going to mean? Yeah, we can. Listen, Israel went in, struck Iran, took out strategic locations. Nothing crazy. They didn't hit their nuclear sites. They didn't do anything like that. They took out their air defenses and some strategic points. Now, Iran fired 300 missiles at them, most of them not hitting much of anything. They were defended. So could we go in and tactically remove all nuclear facilities from Iran? Yes, we absolutely could. Should we? It's not my decision to make. But if you look at that, the people Iran, the entities Iran is holding up, the Houthis, Hamas, Hezbollah, maybe it's time we cut the head off the snake. Maybe it's time we show that we're not playing around anymore. Maybe that peace through strength and showing that strength instead of just displaying it is the answer that does bring some stability to the region, because there's not right now. You still have Hamas firing rockets into Israel. You still have Hezbollah in skirmishes with Israel. You still have a major conflict going on there. You have the potential of Iran getting involved because they have already, over the past few months, had back and forths with Israel. So the fact that we are spending billions of dollars and being in the Middle East to defend shipping lanes, to defend our own ships, to defend our sons and daughters, if we take out who is holding them up, supporting them, supplying them, funding them, does that change the dynamic? It may. And I'm sure this is the very conversations that's going on in very secret rooms across our government. But make no mistake, we have put the assets from tankers that refuel our planes and our bombers to the bombers themselves, to defense systems to these areas, to two separate battle groups. I mean, on a single aircraft carrier, you have 90 aircraft. Between two of them, and the Carl Vinson has both F-35s and F-18s, as well as their normal, you know, F-E-18 Growlers and E-2D Deltas and helicopters and such like that, where the USS Truman just has F-18 squadrons. They have E squadrons, F squadrons, and of course the Growlers. So you have a large contingent of assets there to deal with Iran very swiftly if we need to, while these talks are going on. So a second round of talks have been set for Saturday. Iran tried to push it off a little further into next week, and the Trump administration said, no. No, you're going to come to the table now, and we're going to come to an agreement now. Or we go on to the next step. And what that next step may be, you know, I know we're all talking, well, last week it was the stock market. And, you know, that's kind of gone its course now, and we're still hearing they're cutting Medicaid, they're cutting Medicare, Social Security. No, they're not. They're stop lying to you. But on a daily basis, what we don't hear about is these terrorist organizations, the Houthis, that are firing a dozen missiles or drones or UAVs at our ships to kill our sons and daughters, our husbands and wives, on a daily basis. This is truly happening on a daily basis. And we are striking back. And it's all coming from Iran. It all stems from Iran. So if they don't, because you can tell this administration is getting tired of the nonsense, that they're not learning a lesson, that they're continuing to do these things, even though we've stepped it up, taken out more of the leadership, the fact that they can recirculate new leadership that's still willing to go on this martyrdom to die, because that's what's happening with them. Is it time to take out the bank and the head of that snake? It could be. So we may be talking about that in the next month. That's probably the timeline there, but hopefully not. Hopefully one of the battle groups are on their way home and it was just a training exercise and the bombers go back to the Pacific and the mainland and, you know, it's all said and done. But these are the things that are happening in the world that we've come numb to and blind to, that we really don't get reported on because, you know, just the stuff here that puts us against each other and pits us against each other. And it's sad because speaking to people when I was down in Annapolis, Maryland, they unfortunately agree that a large portion of our nation will simply say if our sons and daughters are harmed that, oh, we shouldn't have been there anyway. You know, I didn't, you know, it's just no loss for me personally. So why would I invest in, you know, the money and risk into a war? And I've said from the start here, any large scale, and I don't think Iran would be a large scale. I think we handle that very easily with what we have there. But any large scale military action with someone like a Russia, China, or North Korea will necessitate some sort of draft. Even though we're hitting recruitment numbers now and we're doing a lot better because people actually want to join the military that we have now, the time shift. And again, any large-scale war, if we've seen anything from the Russia-Ukraine war, is that filling those uniforms have been their biggest problem. And we're going to face that too because we're behind on everything else, from building ships to aircraft. Now, the fact that we have better ships, the fact that we have better aircraft is a good thing. But when we start losing those assets on a battlefield, the fact that we cannot replace them timely like we did in a World War I or World War II, it's going to make a different dynamic. The fact we do not have the tradespeople here to jump in board and retool from building refrigerators and cars to building tanks and ships, it's going to be a big learning curve for us very quickly. And in that meantime, is time will be our enemy. So, but I'd watch these talks with Iran because they're a lot more serious than most of us had been led to believe. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio 529. Somebody on the text message line said, so where's Iran getting the money from? We need to follow that besides the millions the two administrations, Biden and Obama, gave them back, I should say. And then the oil, why isn't it being stopped, dried up, the money to train and dry them up. Well, they are selling their oil to China. That was something I did look into today. And China is actually taking advantage of them as well, because China is buying their oil at a discount because they know no one can else buy it. So China's lowballing Iran. But still, you know, that money is still flowing in for their oil. But China is the one purchasing that now. Real quick, because we do have the news coming up with Paul Michaels. There is a... We've seen it here with our landfills as well, but New Yorkers are revolting against a toxic new neighborhood battery storage facility as backlash grows to the green energy law. See, New York has passed all these green energy laws that, as one councilman, a Queens councilman, said, they're turning a neighborhood into a mini Chernobyl. These batteries have had issues, sparked toxic infernos. And they don't want those toxic infernos that are hard to fight by our firefighters in residential neighborhoods. But that's exactly what's happening. The city has created a dangerous situation. Their proposed 9-DOT battery warehouses. Now, 9-DOT's the name of the energy company that's going to store these hundreds upon hundreds of lithium batteries. And this is... for everything. These aren't small. Now, the company says that, you know, it's safe, reliable energy sources. But there are 9-DOT battery facilities in the Bronx, Brooklyn, and Queens. But the neighborhoods are saying, well, there's a problem. The standoff is increasingly common sight in the five boroughs, with locals complaining about potential blazes that could be difficult to put out, as battery storage explosions in California have shown, because they do have these same facilities in California. California's Public Utilities Commission recently tightened up safety rules for these facilities following fires that spew toxic smoke. So basically they're saying, we're not against these, just not in residential areas. Well, there's not much but that in New York City. So now, these batteries are to store energy primarily from emerging solar and wind power to help New York meet its targets under the much criticized Climate Act of 2019, approved by then Governor Andrew Cuomo. Now a mayoral candidate. So this will be a talking point. Now, these are online batteries. These are batteries that are charged and providing power to the grid, and they're warehousing them in residential facilities. But what they're saying is, if something happens, if something goes wrong and there's a fire in one of these places, it's going to create a toxic mess, as they called it, the mini Chernobyl. So New York is starting to push back. So I saw that and I thought it was a worthwhile story. You know, especially in what we're dealing with here with our landfills and the expansions and gases and everything else. It's pretty same but different, right? It's 5:33 here at WILK. Time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. That song triggers a lot of memories for a lot of people, but the Breakfast Club cast recently had an emotional reunion 40 years later and reveal... if they do a sequel. And it appears that all five, Molly Ringwald, Judd Nelson, Anthony Michael Hall, Emilio Estevez, and Ali Sheedy, are up to the idea. They reunited this past Saturday during a panel at the C2E2 convention in Chicago. The event marked the first time the five actors were together publicly since the cult classic film came out in 1985. You know, I watched some of the video of this, and it was pretty cool. And I was not a huge fan of The Breakfast Club, but it was a good movie. It was a good movie. It's not something, it was not a cult film to me, but it was something that, you know, I watched, and if there's nothing else on, I watch again. But it was cool to see them on stage reunite. Some of them look the same, some of them look different, but they were all up to the idea of doing it again. I feel really very emotional and moved to have us all together. Ringwald, 57, told the crowd during the panel moderated Ringwald also noted that the pop culture convention was the first time Estevez, 62, was involved in a reunion with the cast. "We don't have to use a cardboard cutout anymore because he's here," she joked, adding, "I feel really moved that we're all together." Now, the only one that was not there is the late John Hughes. He was the director of The Breakfast Club. He passed away due to cancer, and they did mention him and say that he was missed. He was missed indeed. So Hughes died of a heart attack in 2009, the director. Hall 57 added that no one matches that, no one comes close to their experience working with Hughes, saying that he was a big part of why The Breakfast Club was as successful as it was. And listen, if it wasn't your thing, it wasn't. But they did say that they'd be open to it. Would you like to see Breakfast Club 2? I wonder how they'd swing that now. Estevez said, "Movies today are concept-driven. They're not character-driven. And the beauty of John is that he focused on the characters first. And when you think about trying to pitch this movie today, it's about five kids sitting in a library all day in detention. The studio executives would have marched you right out the door and said, where are the monsters? Where are the car chases? Where are the big effects?" And he's not wrong. It's also important to remember that we made this movie for $1 million, which at the time was still a lot of money, but the Universal standard was not. It was not, though, as thought of as big, the giant tentpole film they make today. So there's a risk, a lot of risk involved. But today's standards, the movie I don't think would ever get made. The group also agreed that they wouldn't recreate the original out of respect for the director Hughes. So, if it's your thing, this is coming from the New York Post. They did an article. There's some video there as well. If you're a Breakfast Club fan, this is something that you should want to see. I'm sure you could find it on YouTube or anywhere else too, but there is a short video in the New York Post story. So check it out if The Breakfast Club was your cult film of the year. But it was a good watching them all together. And that's coming from someone who liked the movie but was not a huge cult follower of the movie. It's 5:43 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Texter just said they got a scam call from Tax Rapid Relief LLC. Beware. So remember, tomorrow's tax day. You're not going to get unsolicited calls from the IRS. So use your due diligence when it comes to that sort of thing. Feel good story here. And it seems fitting considering where I was this past weekend and around our future leaders and heroes of our military. New Jersey Army veteran with one lung to climb Indonesia's tallest mountain after already tackling Mount Kilimanjaro. Here's a New Jersey Army veteran with one lung. Already climbed Mount Kilimanjaro and is now looking to climb Indonesia's tallest mountain. You gotta love America in the drive in some of our patriots here. A New Jersey Army veteran with one lung is defying all odds by climbing Indonesia's tallest mountain and two other peaks next week after a grueling ascent to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro last year. Adam Faatz, F-A-A-T-Z, 37, will summit the 16,024-foot Cartensis Pyramid on April 22nd, despite having his left lung removed due to pulmonary fibrosis. "Mountaineering for me and the outdoors is probably what saved my life." Faatz of Hawthorne, New Jersey, who had an uphill mental battle after his diagnosis. You could only imagine, right? "It's good for my well-being. It's my outlet. I want to try and encourage people to go and try challenges like this. Not to let their disabilities or illnesses limit them," He plans to first climb the island nation's 9,944-foot Mount Agung on April 18th, followed by Mount Rinjani, the 12,224-foot volcano, the next day during his 10-day journey. Fats, who joined the Army as an 18-year-old in 2006, suffered lung scarring after inhaling toxic fumes from a burn pit while serving in Iraq. During his 2009 deployment, he was tasked with finding and demolishing roadside bombs and ended up frequently inhaling toxic fumes from the smoke-spewing pit. They call them nowadays the modern-day Agent Orange because anything and everything basically that the military would use gets destroyed in that burn pit. You have chemicals, you have bodily fluids, rubber, paint, he said. After years of pain and misdiagnosis, a New York doctor discovered that his left lung was covered in scar tissue in November of 2018. They ended up almost removing the entire left lung, he said. It wasn't working. In 2021, he turned to the outdoors along with therapy for help recovering from a real decline mental health-wise, he said. I was really lonely battling what was going on with my lungs and all the medical stuff, he said. I had known for a long time I kind of needed help after being hospitalized and getting treatment. His childhood love with wildlife inspired him to climb New York's tallest peak, Mount Marcy, December 2021. I wanted to do something for pulmonary fibrosis to raise some sort of awareness, he said, adding a boost in endorphins helped him feel better too. Let's face it, coming from the military and all that stuff, I seek out, you know, adrenaline in dangerous situations. Fat's goal is to complete the 7 summits, climbing the highest mountains of each of the 7 continents. He finished his first peak in January 2024 when he climbed Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania, the world's tallest freestanding mountain in 9 days. In recent months, Fats has been training 7 days a week with a machine that simulates high altitude up to 20,000 feet to prepare for his daring climbs in Indonesia, as he also hikes 50-plus miles a week with his dog, Taco, and does Pilates and weights. Mountaineering is endurance training. It's not about how strong you can be. It's about how long you can go. He eventually hopes to summit Mount Everest. Fats, who may one day need a lung transplant, said he's doing the daring climbs to raise awareness for a little understood disease. I want to make it a household name, he said. And God bless this hero and his endeavors, and wish him luck. Hope he does it. It's interesting because at one of the events I was at this weekend, there was a commander, an EOD commander, who was telling a story about an individual who played sports all through high school and college and worked with bombs. He was an EOD technician and stepped on a pot mine out in Afghanistan, and it took off his lower part of his leg. And when he went to go see him in the hospital, you know, a few weeks later, he was all ready to go and says, sir, you know, I just got to get some therapy. I'm going to get, you know, this going. I'm going to be moving and, you know, I'll be ready for the next deployment. So he's like, all right, you know, just do what you need to do for you and get better and such like that. And then when they returned from their deployment, when he got back from the hospital in Germany, he went to visit him in a hospital at Walter Reed. And he said he was a different person, put on some weight. They had to amputate his leg further up because of some complications that he had. So he lost more of his leg. He was just not the same person. He said he was checked out. And he had a heart-to-heart with him. And said, you know, a couple weeks after this, when you were more hurt than you are now, you're on the road to recovery now, you were ready to go. You were going to be with us on our next deployment. You were good to go. And he was really mentally defeated. And he had a conversation, and his high school football coach came out and just happened to be there together. And the high school football coach asked the commander to stay. And they sat down together and he said, when I met you in high school, as a freshman football player, because you weren't very good. As a matter of fact, you weren't a good, very good football player at all. But through those years, through that freshman season and then your sophomore season, you put in the effort 110%. You made a lot of mistakes. You fell over things. You didn't do the right things all the time. And he walked him through how hard he worked to become a decent football player, to be a member of that team, to make their team successful. And he goes, our team wouldn't have been the success it was without your effort. And he goes, and you weren't a great football player, but you put the effort in. You put the drive in. You put that time in. He goes, where's that football player now? Where's that young man? And the commander keyed in on it and joined in where he could, but he said, this guy had it covered, this football coach, how he motivated him. 6 months later, he had an artificial foot, and he was running ultra marathons, running bikes for hundreds of miles. That's all he needed to take. That's all he needed to get him back set in. So, you know, when I saw this story, remembering the story I heard this weekend, I just figured they fit well together. So it's amazing people out there. Mentors, coaches, and members themselves. 5:57 here at WILK. We'll be back.
Well, that's it for today's show on this Monday, April 14th, 2025. Not too bad. We got through Monday all right, right? Now we're rolling into the weekend. We're good. I promise we're going to be here for the whole week this week. Had some family functions the past couple of weekends. You know, I had to do the grandson's first birthday, my daughter's banquet, my nephew's confirmation. It's all good now until the end of May. And then I got my daughter's graduation from the Naval Academy. Maybe I'll do some stuff on social media. But appreciate you guys. God bless. Be safe. And we'll be here tomorrow.